Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics in Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What is going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Podcast time. In fact, before we start the podcast, I say it every week. However, I have a Discord channel that we talk about the podcast. I give free records out, do everything to do with me. If you're really into kind of getting to know me a little bit more and getting to be part of the community of what we do, there's some really cool people on there. So the link is in the description. Get involved on that. Also, if you listen to this on a regular and you haven't subscribed, please hit subscribe and please give us a little review. Keeps the podcast going. Really appreciate it if you can do that. So thank you very much. Podcast time is an exciting one this week. Carl Cox and Christopher Coe. Both of these two amazing human beings don't really need any introduction. However, I wanted to get them both on the podcast to talk about their record label, Awesome Soundwave. I did a remix for Mark Romboy on the album that he released on the record label. And I've been really interested on the concept of this record label that Carl and Christopher opened. I noticed the launch of it, I think it was around COVID time. And I was really intrigued with what they're doing. And then Mark asked me to do a remix. And then more recently, Christopher just asked me to do a remix of one of his new records. I really respect both of them massively. Obviously, what Christopher has done and what Carl has done in the industry is amazing. Carl has been in techno music pretty much since day dot, and has been extremely innovative over the years. And with what Christopher's doing and the live aspect as well has been absolutely amazing. And what he's done production-wise over the years is amazing. So I just, yeah, this conversation was really, really insightful. Really enjoyed it. So without further ado, Carl Cox and Christopher Coe. Carl Cox and Christopher Coe, what is cooking, lads? How are you?
You start, Christopher, because you've had a hell of a week.
I'm actually great. Now I feel like a little bit more settled, but yeah, you're right. It's been a hell of a week. My traveling to Berlin from Ibiza turned out to be a 12 and a half hour odyssey just to get here to play at Sisyphos, which was worth it, though, even though they lost my luggage. And I thought I'd lost my modular kit forever, you know, 10 grand's worth of gear just gone.
Damn.
Down the conveyor belt at some other airport.
Was that Saturday?
That was Saturday, yeah.
Yeah. I got caught on the same as well. that Lufthansa flight with the puncture.
No, I heard about that one. No, this was just more my own bad planning. I thought I was getting to Berlin quicker, and I booked these flights that had a fairly tight connection, and of course I didn't make the connection, and then I had to buy another flight and blah, blah. It's my own fault.
Okay.
Bad tour management. My manager was like, why did you book those flights? I had told you to book these other flights. Like, okay, lesson learned.
It's never good when you get told off by your own manager, is it? Let's be honest.
Thanks,
Carl, how are you, man?
Yeah, good. I had a pretty good weekend. I was in Paris for the first time in 10 years.
Wow.
10 years. Wow. Can you imagine that? So I played in Paris 10 years ago. I said, right, an amazing party. I'll see you in 10 years. They'd be like, girl, you are mad. This is catastrophic. What is this? This is not good. But it happened. Yeah, 10 years later. So I played at brunch in the middle of a horse racing place, equestrian centre place. Fantastic. So basically the brunch organisers, they have the same sort of theme where they have like a lot of the area or the forestry that they use to just make it feel a little organic than just rather than a kind of pop-up kind of like rave stage sort of thing. And just make you feel a part of what's around you.
Yeah.
And an amazing, sell out 10,000 people, young ones, you know, the next generation going in, good energy. Myself was playing, Joseph Caparati, Ida Egerberg, Chilean Manahutu. Wonderful lineup, good local DJs, great music from house to techno music, fantastic. It was really great. And then I went from there to Larnaca, to Cyprus, of which I played a year ago, a place called Biennox Festival for the first time. And yeah, Cyprus, who knew? There's ravers going to Cyprus. But you know what? Cyprus actually is a place where a lot of the English contingent go, you know, to enjoy the weather there and the economy and everything. But I actually was there for a watch company, which I am involved in, been an ambassador for the last 5 years, called Zenith. And they had a shop opening there at their new casino, which they've opened there in Cyprus, which is incredible. And they've literally taken the whole kind of, you know, hotel kind of ideal of a casino from Vegas and just went kaboom and plonked it in the middle of this place miles away from Larnaca. It's like Vegas. It's just incredible what they've done there. I mean, they've spent fortunes on it.
Yeah.
But it's really nice, you know. If you go there, it's a one-stop shop. You know, spa, swimming pool, food, everything. It's lovely. So I managed to do an opening of one of their new stores there, which I don't really do that much of. You know, you cut the ribbon, you know, of the new store.
Amazing.
And away you go. So it had nothing to do with music industry whatsoever. It's completely different. But I did actually play there for their clients and everything. A small crowd, about 200 people, house music all day long. And it's nice. It was a good thing to do. Just so far, I didn't realise, you know, once you get to Larnaca, to get back to England, it's 5 hours.
Is it really?
To get back, yeah. Jeez. 5 hours on a domestic British Airways flight. My ass was killing me by the time I got back.
Damn.
You know, one of those stupid ass chairs. 5 hours. But, you know, not even like a big ish plane. It was like the one that you take from, you know, London to Scotland, you know.
Also, the British Airways like business class is hilarious because they just take out the middle seat. They don't take out the middle seat. They just like fill it up with like a tray and act like the rest of it is like business class. You're like, okay, guys, great.
Yeah, and you're paying a premium as well. You know, you're like, guys, come on, is that it? You know what I mean? Oh my god. Anyway, I mean, yeah. I know it's not a third world problem, but at the end of the day, we do do a lot of flying. We do. It's the only way that we can get around to do what we do. But yeah, 5 hours is long enough to be on a plane like that, and I really felt that.
Where are you guys based now? Because I know you. Sydney.
Yeah, I'm in Brighton. I'm in the South Coast.
Oh, really? Are you not in Australia at all now?
No, not at the moment. We won't be getting back there until end of October, November.
And do you split your time up?
Yeah, so I normally leave Australia around about April, May.
Yeah.
And then I'm in Europe and everywhere else from May all the way through until October. So my cycle of life is basically, as soon as it gets too cold here, I'm off. So around about October, November, Australia. And the same when I'm in Australia.
Are you the same, Christopher?
Yeah. Sorry, there's this ongoing tintinnabulation just outside the doors of the flat where I am in Berlin. So
we can't hear it. It's fine.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we're good.
I like to use the word. It's not often you get to use the word tintinnabulation. So
I can't say I've ever heard it.
It means the ringing of bells.
Oh.
Yeah, there's a church just there.
Oh, wow.
Anyway. Yeah, well, I'm based in Melbourne too. I've been there 30 odd years. And oh, wow. Carl, you've been there, what, 15 or so? 15
years? 22.
22?
Oh, 22 years I've been in that house. Yeah, but I bought it in 2003.
Oh, my God. I remember when we got there. Jesus, it's that long. God. Yeah. And the studio that you see behind Carl and behind me is based in just outside of Melbourne, down the coast, near Carl's place. It's his beautiful creative space that we both work in. I have the privilege to be there. So we're based in Melbourne. I mean, that's the residence, I guess. But in the last forever for Carl, it's been halfway between here and there. And in more recent years, because we started doing the live stuff, it's also been similar for me and particularly this year has been pretty hectic because, as you know, you will probably talk about, but the majority of Carl's shows besides the DJing have been hybrid live shows. So I'm on the road with Carl as his stage tech and also doing my own shows. So it's been an amazing, incredible, hectic, crazy time since May. Yeah,
I want to go into the awesome Soundwave label and kind of you both of your relationships together and kind of how this whole live record label has come together and live performances and kind of semi-DJ, semi-live modular kind of setups and how this all kind of came apparent in touring it, really.
Well, I suppose I'll start because it's not my first rodeo going out live electronically. I was signed to Perfecto Records back in 1991-92, and while I released the second single, the first one was I Want You Forever, which was highly successful. The second one, Planet of Love, wasn't as successful, but it was the follow-up.
Yeah.
And I felt that it needed, because they had a vocalist on that second track, that he needed to have some sort of live element to it. So myself and a guy called Neil McLennan. Now, Neil McLennan has produced the albums for Liam Howlett for The Prodigy.
Yeah.
But before that, I kind of knew Neil McLennan as he was working with Guru Josh at the time, God rest his soul. And he was doing all of the drum machine programming and sequencing for him. So that's how it kind of started for me in a sense of what could be done live.
Yeah.
Now I was way excited by that, but at that particular moment. And my first ever live shows actually was in Melbourne, Australia, where I was working with Neil McLennan and working with a keyboard called an SQ80, and then basically using all the MIDI to drive all the sequences and the keyboards, and I was actually playing keyboards live at the time and everything, and it's really exciting. But you know, we're carrying around like large, you know, kind of transport cases for all the computers and the S1000s and all that. You know, it was like cars coming with all this live equipment on leads and everything, and I just couldn't do the live and the DJing. So at the time, it was way too advanced for a lot of people to ascertain to begin with, because the Prodigy were going out live at the time, so was I going out live at the time, but also DJing at the same time, because people couldn't understand, you know, my way forward of DJing and live. It was too much. Yeah. It was one or the other.
Yeah.
So I stopped the live at that particular time and then carried on as a DJ.
When was that, though? What year?
1992, 93.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, 93. Yeah. In fact, it was nearly 2 years. I was actually going out at doing, you know, being booked to do both at the same time, but also I needed road crew and all that sort of stuff to do that. So at the time, I was like, I can't do both, so I'm going to just keep DJing, and then obviously got to this point. But then the second time I decided to do it again is where I met Christopher on my album, All Roads Leads to the Dance Floor. And on that album, I used a lot of live musicians and vocalists and songs, and Christopher, one of his songs were on the album as he came out, and we did two live shows with that album. Yeah. Again, I felt it was, I wanted to kind of get behind the artists, get, you know, people could see that there's something going on behind the, behind all the studio sound of what I was doing and everything. And again, it was difficult because of all the artists I use and percussionists and trumpet players and all that sort of bass guitarists. It was just too much to keep together and to go out like that as a unit. And that means that, that I have to, you know, stop DJing and try and do that again. And that didn't work either. So I said to myself, well, I'm not going to make any more albums. I'm done. So 2010, and after five album releases, this is it. I'm just going to do, you know, remixes, and I'm just going to just make some, you know, some club tracks, of which I had obviously a record label, Intech Records, which is still dormant, but we're looking to bring that back at some point. And 23rd Century Records, which I decided that I was only going to put out club tracks on that, which I still do now today. And then COVID hit, and we was all stuck indoors. And I was like, I've got all this equipment. What do I do? So, I mean, I might have just reacquaint myself and see what happens, you know. Yeah. And Christopher was along at that particular time as well, where we could still meet each other. Where we're in the same vein, we were building the studio, because I really built the studio just not for any real reason apart from satisfying my own self ideals of what I would like to do. Without no pressure from anyone, no record label, no one telling me I need a hit record, none of that. I was just, you know, I'll wake up one morning in my underpants and go, oh, you know, there's a riff, you know, bung it in the computer, and maybe one day I'll get to it.
Yeah.
You know, this, the whole idea of the studio, but this is my fourth studio that I've built in my life, and I wanted this one to be the very best that I've ever built. Mm. And Christopher really helped me to ascertain that dream of mine, and here we are. So once Christopher helped me build the studio and everything, and then I think it was only right and fitting if he was really into running the studio, and then, you know, being creative like how we have been so far, you know, by what we've done, and then here it is. It's the best place for both of us, really, not just myself, to make this work for us and creatively. So the whole kind of the whole record label of Awesome Salmon came about because Christopher, in his own right, as an electronic recording artist, and me being inspired by what he was doing, he made this album, and the album that he came to me with, it didn't fit anything that I was doing at a particular time.
Yeah.
And I just felt that, you know, with what he was doing, we could basically create a label that would suit our needs, in a sense of no pressure from anybody or anything. We could just release what we believe is something that we feel really passionate about.
Yeah.
Of which, with Christopher's album, I felt that him being, you know, the first artist on Awesome Soundwave would be early fitting. Now, Awesome Soundwave wasn't built for me primarily, and it still isn't, because all the artists that we have on that we bring to the table, we support wholeheartedly because of their live performances.
Yeah.
So we don't sign anyone onto the label unless they can perform it live and feel really passionate about doing that, because it's okay going, okay, well, I can perform it live, or I've been doing it for years. You know, I think I've been doing it for years, and this is a great opportunity and a platform for me to be supported by what we believe in was the best place for you if you decided to do that. So that means you can basically play and make anything. It wasn't, you don't even have to make dance floor, just your soul, whatever you profess at the end of the day by how you want your music to be supported by, and then you can see, especially on our output, what you can see so far, you know, it's not about dance floor, it's about you, the person, individual, about you, the guy or the girl, it doesn't matter. And if it's something electronically that we feel that we can get behind, and then an Awesome Soundwave is a label for you. So, you know, with Christopher's passion and the way how he basically creates and curates everything around him, this was a perfect opportunity for us to be able to do something collectively and to be able to stand behind that. So, you know, when this all was going along at the particular time, just before COVID hit, we were, you know, signing, you know, great acts and artists, and really getting behind, you know, people who are making not just, you know, EPs, making albums worth of music, and being able to perform that music live. And this was really exciting for me. It's a long time that I've seen, you know, collectively, you know, electronic artists that don't really get represented, but if you give them the platform and people see them, they go, wow, okay. Yeah. You know, having another DJ is another story, but having another electronic live artist is basically something of which is something that you would experience, something that you would never have thought about. It's out there, you know, at the end of the day, all of this is out there,
yeah.
But it just needs to be kind of gathered in such a way that it makes sense once you get to hear it and actually see it and the idea and the concept of all of that.
I think it's also like very... times have changed massively, right? From the 90s and from early noughties, when you kind of, computers weren't really around to write music with, and it was more so very like hardware driven, and people had to play an instrument. People had to learn how to use a sampler, a hardware sampler. And then it was like, how do we then play this live? And it's like, well, we just do it how we do it in the studio. So we move the studio to the stage and we've got a show. Whereas now it's completely the opposite. You don't have to do any of that. And I think with the likes of like Prodigy, Chemical Brothers, there's just countless insane live artists out there, but you don't see the like the smaller guys and smaller girls that are kind of trying to kind of grow up through it. Or even some of the artists that you guys have, like I was just listening to the Stimmin records on the label, and like Stimmin for me is like one of my favorite producers out there over the years, and been consistent with the records that he releases. But also is like, it's hard to kind of give these people a platform in a live show, in a live, because we're so confined to the four walls of a club and a festival and other lineups of other DJs coming on. It's like, okay, you book four DJs and one live artist, and it's like, well, the live artist, it takes an hour to set up and an hour to take down. It's hard. It's a lot of work, and it's hard to as a tour. It's like, as I know you guys, well, you just explained at the beginning, Christopher, like to tour live is hard. To tour DJ is easy, especially nowadays. You just rock up with your USB sticks. To tour live is, yeah, easy. Literally. And I guess this is the thing that I noticed what you guys are doing during COVID, and you did the live show with Beatport that you did.
We actually did four awesome Soundwave live streams featuring all of our artists,
yeah,
during the period. And that's when, you know, like as Carl said, that's when he was like, right, I'm going to pick up my gear,
yeah,
and I'm joining the band. you know, because obviously, the amazing opportunity that this time gave Carl and I was the time to just be in one place, and particularly Carl, to just be in one place and spend the time to design a system, learn how to use it, to play live. You know,
yeah,
if that hadn't happened, Carl, I doubt that you would have had the time to sit down and figure it all out, you know. So, yeah, it's a great opportunity. But and then to decide to take it on the road is another big step. Last year was like putting your toes in the water. I mean, I guess I should take a step back. When we first decided to do this label, it was really Carl's inspiration. Like, as you said, all I did was I went to Ireland, climbed the mountains, and decided to make a techno album based on my experience of my home landscape.
Wow.
And try and reinterpret it, and called it Mountains of Silence, but took all the vowels out so that it was like clever. real clever. I went to Carl with it, going, just because, you know, we're great friends, and I really wanted his opinion on the music. And
yeah,
that's when he was like, right, well, I mean, we both knew it's not right for Intech, but he said, right, we're going to start a label and we're putting this record out. And I was amazed. And
yeah,
then the next day he's like, right, and because the album was only, I was saying, I'm going to perform this live. I've filmed all the landscapes. I'm going to be a live audio visual show. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but that's the plan.
Yeah.
And he said, right, we're doing this. And then the next day he said, right, and this label is only for live artists and you're setting the benchmark. I'm like, oh, not much pressure, mate. Which I love about you, Carl. You're so encouraging in that way. And I love the fact that you place the trust in me to work with you on this. And then he's like, and besides, we're building a studio. Come on, let's do this. So it all kind of happened at the same time. And, you know, we thought of the name Awesome Soundwave because it's awesome and it's all about sound waves. And that was also the name of a Buddhist deity, Awesome Sound King. So that was inspiring. And I've always thought of Carl as the awesome sound king. And so, you know, it kind of came from there. Now, what's my point? The point is that, you know, fast forward to today, and in the last 6 months, we've toured, both Carl and I have toured as live artists around the world. Thanks to Carl, I've been able to get these amazing gigs because of his support.
Yeah.
And also, he's been able to do these incredible, dynamic, hybrid live shows. To me, they're live shows, but yeah. I understand that they're hybrid because you're also playing some other people's music and incorporating it all in. But it's still deep, really dynamic and live, with an array of, you know, the TR-8 drum machines and you know, array of equipment that we've put together. The Pulsar 23 is a great unit. There's, you know, we're just
Moogs.
A whole table of gear, yeah, and. I don't want to focus on the struggles. I want to focus on the success, because it's been amazing to see the response from people and hear the response from people since the first time we went live. And people, the crowd responds in a different way, I think. Yeah. And Carl, you could probably expand on this, but I think that the crowd feel, whether they realize what they're looking at is a fully live show or not, it sort of doesn't matter because it's about the party, right?
Yeah, of course.
But they respond in a way that I think there's an energy that that Carl brings, and you know, we all do when we're live, because we are so focused on trying to deliver something. You know, we're talking about not playing a record for 3 minutes and then thinking of the next one. We're talking about the next beat,
yeah,
you know, the next bar. So we're really focused on trying to deliver something that carries through for the dance floor in this context. And the energy that is delivered because of that as a live artist is picked up on by the crowd. There's a level of danger. There's an energy of risk, because it could all fall apart within the space of a bar. There's the crowd of feeling and energy coming from the stage that is different.
Yeah.
I'm not saying better or worse, but it's different, and it's a different energy, and you can feel that response. And I've now we've done how many shows? Quite a lot.
50 shows.
Nice.
50 shows, and that energy that comes from the audience is quite astounding.
Mm.
And the energy the Carl puts out, of course, is astounding too, because he's now not only playing tracks but a drum machine.
Yeah.
303 and you know, the DFAM and so I think whether the crowd realizes it's live or not, I think most people now do. And the fact is, because we did 4 series of live streams during the COVID times with the camera above the gear, I think we helped to educate, in a little way, to educate the world about what it is that we're doing. And because Carl's been such, you know, you've been so encouraging about it, people have picked up, sat up and noticed and gone, hang on a sec. And then also at the same time, I think that the access to, you know, live equipment has become a lot easier. And the interest in modular Eurorack equipment, for example. Yeah. And so it's, you know, I just think, Carl, you always seem to have this prescience. You kind of always know just ahead of the time that something's going to hit. And I think at that same time, we're doing a live label, and then all of a sudden there's all these live artists coming back on the scene. They've always been there. There's always been a live artist, but they've had to struggle because they've had to struggle trying to set up in between DJs.
Yeah.
And it's still a bit like that, because a lot of promoters and show producers are not quite thinking about what is needed for the live artist, and we still find we have to educate them. But there's definitely a lot more interest and a lot more support and a lot more live artists.
Well, I think it's really important as well, because realistically, all thanks to you guys for doing that, really, because pre-COVID, they were there. We all know multiple live artists, and there was people that were doing it very well, but it just wasn't really there on a commercial. But I think what the difference is that from an outsider's point of view, you guys have told the story very well. And I think without kind of treating people stupid in a kind way, people just don't understand. And I think you need to tell the story in a correct way. You need to explain to people what you're doing for them to actually understand it. And I think what you guys have done is, with Carl, with what you're saying, is like, we need to do this and this is what we're doing, and not kind of blurring the lines and like occasionally putting an artist on the label that does, that doesn't do live, and occasionally in your hybrid set going, actually, I'm just going to DJ today. And occasionally when it's supposed to be a live show, just going to DJ. It's very easy to do that, to kind of, to not stick to the goal and the end goal. And I think by carrying on and just being relentless, you create something that you slowly educate people, and people understand eventually, and then they know what they're going to get, and they know that it's a special show, and they know that what you guys are doing is extra work, and they appreciate it more. It's just a thing, but you just have to tell the story well, and you guys have, you've done it very well.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing is, I mean, I could take the easy route, you know, in my career, and just continue to DJ and just leave it, mm-hmm. and you know, and just go, well, I'll just leave it to Christopher and just leave it. Nice, you know. But I just know, I mean, I carry 2 Pelican cases worth of equipment. Yeah. You know, when I spoke to Joseph Caporetti, I spoke to Adam Bayer, I spoke to Dubfire, I said to all of them, I said, you know, why don't you guys think about going live? Just turn a corner, maybe. And all of them said, absolutely not. No way. Not even like a thought. It was like, they saw me 2 Pelican cases and went, no. I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'll just carry on then, you know. But when I do, you know, we set it up and I get going, they're the first ones with their cameras going, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, the energy of it, the power of it all. I feel it, you know, at the end of the day, if I don't DJ ever again and I just carry on doing live, brilliant. Because it really does, you know, stir the fire in my belly, knowing that I'm not just playing other people's techno music, I'm making techno music.
Yeah.
It's a creation. I don't even know where I actually start, where it's in the middle, or where it's going to end.
Yeah.
Apart from I'm taking the journey as much as the people listening and seeing the journey and feeling the journey with me. And I think that's what techno music has always been about in some ways. You know, all the time, if you think about all the records that were ever made in the beginning, you know, 87, 88, 89, well, all those records were made live.
Yeah.
There was no computers, it was all sequences. And it was then basically, they're recorded onto maybe a 32-track tape, which went out at 16, it went down to 8, which went down at 2 inch ding ding ding, and it was all basically just put together, and then that was recorded on a stereo bus to master, and you had that track, Strings of Life.
Yeah, classic.
You know, I mean, for me, that is where we're missing a point in where we're making music at the moment. You know, because everyone's kind of making the record to suit and to fit where we are right now.
Yep.
Where all that music in the beginning, it didn't fit or suit anything. It was just the creation of it.
Yeah.
You know, when you heard Cybertron by Juan Atkins and all these records, they were just thrown in because that's all they were doing. They were just like, well, we don't know where this is going, but we're having fun doing it, and just put it out there. Who cares? Yeah. You know. And my album, Electronic Generations, was done on exactly the same premise because I just felt I've got nothing to lose here. I've been doing this for years and years and years, and I'm having fun. And funny enough, the mixer that helped me do that as well was something of which I got behind, which is the Pioneer V10. And at the beginning, when I had the beta version of that, or beta version of that, here in Brighton, and then they came over with it, Pioneer. And I was using Richie Horton's mixer at the time, the Model 1, and I was praising the Model 1 all the way through. But there's quite a few things missing on that Model 1 for me, which it didn't allow me to kind of go any further than where I was with that until the V10 came out. And I said to people that this mixer is a game changer.
It is.
Right? Everyone was saying to me, oh, well, you're just getting paid. Cox has got like, he's getting millions of them, you know, and he's selling it all off. I'm like, it's a game changer. And I tell you why. It's because you can record stems from each channel into your Ableton Live. So therefore, this what you see behind me is not actually one of the mixes. But when you've got the kick drum and the bass line and you've got percussion and you've got your sounds and the modular, and it's all been recorded on stems, Hallelujah. Because yeah. any mistakes or anything that you did or you didn't do is all being recorded. Mm. I was just like, Ricky's mixer doesn't do that. Any mixer doesn't really do that. The only mixer that does it is a Pioneer.
Yeah.
And the Nexus 900 does it, and the new V10 does. They're the only two. So other than that, I would have been sitting in the studio just going, I'm going to make a percussion. All right, I want to make a hi-hat. Oh, yeah. And it just would have been generic. Where when I was just going live, I was just going, we are bang, 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 just bashing everything together. And an hour later, I accidentally made an album.
Yeah.
Accidentally. So I just go, top tail that one, top tail this one, all stems, top tail that one. So once I had all the stems, I was just thinking, maybe I'll put them all together as a demo and see what happens, you know.
Yeah.
Put it out, and then I ended up with a free album deal on BMG, of which 30 years ago I got signed to them by Perfecto Records. And I cannot believe that I ended up with a record deal in the pandemic, only because my approach to making music was from a live point of view. So I can't go back from life to what I was doing before, because for me it's like taking a step backwards. And also maybe I did lose an edge by trying to comply, trying to fit into what's going on, where this new album had nothing to do with any of it. You either liked it or you didn't like it. But the thing is, I love it because I can take the next step and perform it.
Yeah. No, I want to go into that fit in the mold, because I think it's very easy nowadays to kind of go on a streaming platform or go on a download service platform and see, okay, here's the DJs I want to align with. Here's the artist I want to align with. Let's see what they're making. Let's see what playlists they're going to. Okay, let's go listen to a playlist. What does this playlist sound like? Okay, I know exactly what I need to do. Looking at it as a business, realistically, that's what it is. It's not necessarily it's not looking at it in an artistic aspect. It's going, okay, what's the fastest route to get to success? And it's like, okay, well, I need to align with all of these artists. I need to sound like all these artists, which in the grand scheme of things, that is how you have a career in anything, in the grand scheme of things. However, it waters everything down to a level of you just have carbon copies of everyone. And the originality is just so not out of there. And it will be interesting, like, both of you have had extremely long careers in techno.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And where we're at right now in techno or in electronic music right now, for me personally, and there's some amazing music out there. There really is. You just have to dig. But I think that the level of carbon copies out there is just depressing.
Well, I got a thing to say about this, if you don't mind me jumping in. I know the thing is, Kyle has the longest experience of all of this. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what you say. But I think that you're correct in some ways, but I think also that, you know, the world now is so much more accessible.
Yeah.
And so there is so much more out there that it is a bit harder to dig and find some of the amazing stuff that actually does exist. I must compliment you on your production, because you really do like to step outside. Yeah, and it's amazing. Like the remixes you've done for us and for other people in your own tracks, I really, really admire your work. And I would also suggest that the reason I'm so excited about the live electronic scene is that and this is my own barrel that I push, but I tend to think that this may be one of the last bastions of electronic musical experimentation, because of the very fact that you, even as an artist, you're not quite sure where you're going to end up when you start twiddling those knobs with your modular or with your, you know, your machines. And that allows for ideas to come out that you may never have thought of if you're just in the box producing a cookie cutter main floor techno track. Yeah. And there's some amazing main floor techno tracks that are out of the box too. But I would dare say that a lot of them are produced with a lot of live equipment because... Yeah. You know, when I'm playing live, the stuff that I'm playing, and because I'm under the pressure of playing live, that comes out, I'm like, wow, God, fuck me. I would never have thought of producing that.
Yeah.
And I say the same, you know, Kyle, you've said this to me. And we're at a point now where we're not only expanding creatively, but also there is a huge amount of copycatting.
Yeah.
To the point where, like you say, there's the business techno side of things. And yeah, I don't know. What do you reckon, Kyle? Are we going to get past this?
We will get past it, 100% we will, because it's just now getting seriously boring. The thing is, there's now blurred lines of what actual techno music is.
Yeah.
You know? This is the biggest problem. You know, you've got a record, this is 170 BPM, and everyone's calling that techno. Well, it's just impossible.
Yeah.
It's 170 BPM. I mean, it's, you know, an annoyance. That's not techno as we know it. You know, I've always kind of like, you know, seeing techno music as music being made, you know, because of technology enables us to make this sound. So, you know, with the musicianship, which I think has been lost a lot at the moment in techno, it's been lost. So we try and bring that musicianship back into the sound of where I think, I don't really want to call it real techno because it just sounds really purist, but I like to feel that individually we have our own statement to say in the music that we make. And that's the thing, you know, I was talking to John Rundell the other day about Intech Records. And Intech Records, basically, from the very beginning, every single artist we signed on Intech Record had their own individual sound.
Yeah.
So, you know, Vince Watson didn't sound like John, and John didn't sound like Renato Cohen, and Renato Cohen didn't sound, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You see, every single artist, they all had their own individual sound within the realms of techno music or tech, or the tech house sound of what we had at that particular time. And this is what's so fantastic about what we're doing with ASW, because none of us sound the same as each other.
Yeah.
So we're just, I suppose our story is what we're doing is to keep kind of putting out the idea that we are all individual artists and we all have our own statement to say in what we do as a realm of electronic music, and just stick by that. And if we're the only kind of channel or funnel for this music to continue in the future, and it may be at some point, all of the artists that are making, you know, the techno music of which basically has a formula will then come back into something of which represents yourself as an individual.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing that's kind of missing in some ways. And also not being scared. You know, I mean, I did a great mix for, well, between myself and Christopher, did a great mix for Deborah DeLuca.
Yeah.
And you know, she understands techno. I mean, she comes from techno to where she's kind of ended up now, but then decided to turn the corner of commerciality. So that's her choice, and I get to understand that. But we did a really awesome track called Flora, which in Italian means flower, which is beautiful. And she has her voice, very kind of like a beautiful voice. It says something within flowers, and it's really awesome. And we put this techno around it, which kind of reaches to where you are, but then takes you to somewhere else.
Yeah.
And she hasn't played it or got behind it at all, where you would think that. Mm. The reason why she hasn't really played it, because she's scared of people thinking, well, maybe it's too pure, or maybe I don't understand what you're trying to say within that mix. So I end up playing it, and everyone's like, oh my God, it's brilliant. What is that? Yeah. And I was like, well, it's a track that we did, which represents techno music, but also to give her something of some sort of substance based on what she, you know, she's now known for.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I mean, if you got an ABBA version of Gimme, 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 okay, well, there's not much, and that's considered as techno. And then, unfortunately, the only place from that point It's not up.
If I hear that fucking song one more time, I'm going to...
Yeah, we've reached the echelon. We can't go any further than this in the sense of acceptance for what that is. Mm. So we have to go back to go forward. But you know, that's her choice. And if she's sticking by that in the end of the day, and I don't want to just call her out as an individual.
No, I really respect your opinion, though, because I think realistically, as of... For both of you, but especially for you, Carl, as your long career as a DJ, you have seen, we all have seen, but you especially have seen artists go in and out of careers and fashions go in and out of being popular and come back around and then leave again. Trance is now back, which is a very interesting time, going to the gym and literally listening. Like, I go to the gym, I was at the gym this morning, and like, they were playing trance classics, and I was like, I swear I got rid of these in my life, and they came back around. But I think it's amazing. Like, I love fashion. I love this, because it brings new people in, and realistically, like, everyone putting a donk on the record, like, the kids that are listening to it now, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, like, they'd never heard of it before, so it's a brand new thing to them. It's a brand new thing, and it's just us oldies that are going, why? Don't get it.
That's funny. I mean, you know, we played in Amsterdam at Secret Project Festival recently. It was great to be able to play there, but you know, Carl and I were both going, so how come we're on this lineup? Because the rest of the artists were, you know, hard, fast TikTok techno artists who, you know, are great in their own right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so I was opening, and I just played ambient for the first 20 minutes. maybe it was a bit cheeky, but I just thought, well, it was a nice way to start into the day. And Carl, you completely smashed it, and the crowd totally just at the end, because you gave them a lesson in hardcore rave from back in the day, plus some cabaret tunes, so it was really worthwhile. But the guys in between, they're amazing in their own right, but I finished at 132 beats per minute, my set, and the guy after was like, thanks, man, that was amazing, and came straight in at 155.
Yeah.
Straight in. No, thank you, no lube, straight in, bend over, boom, 155. And I thought, right, okay, so that's where it's at. But then on the other side, I'm thinking, right, well, these are 18 to 20 to 22-year-old people, who don't have the history that we have, and neither should they. And they're finding this really exciting. And in a way, I'm like, actually, this, I don't have to like this.
Yeah.
Because this is for the kids. And, and I don't mean that patronizingly. This is for these young people who are excited about this, as we were excited about techno at that age, that our parents were like, oh my God, what is this terrible sound, this noise? You're making noise. It's just disgusting. There's this boom, boom, boom all the time. What's going on? And I find myself saying the same thing. And then I thought, hang on a second. This is good, actually.
Yeah.
Something will come out of this that we probably don't expect. Maybe it'll be a weird hybrid of drum and bass and techno and who knows? I don't want to predict. I actually have to be respectful. I do actually respect the fact that there is this new excitement happening, even if I don't like it personally. Same. However, it's the cookie cutter thing that I worry about. I just want people to, if you're going to play at 155, do the craziest motherfucking thing you've ever could think of and make it wild.
Yeah.
Or, you know, do a weird ambient thing at 155. Don't copy everyone. That's my only beef.
Yeah. Because the thing is, you know, we're hearing samples in these tracks, which are so easy to just rip off.
Yeah.
You know, so we're not really hearing anything original and originality. Where, you know, techno back in the day was all original.
Yeah.
You know, we never really sampled anything. It was kind of, it was all, you know, of all this equipment that we have, surely we can make new sounds or something interesting or something else. You know, if you listen to my album, there's no samples in there. It's all original sound. And why not? Because, you know, as you know, you go to any of these machines, you know, you can literally just go to your synthesizer and make this weirdest noise of all time. But that's at least you created that, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it might be a good sound or a bad sound, but at least you created it. And we need to see more of that. I would like to see more of that for the future. And from where I'm standing, you know, from what I'm trying to do. It's, I mean, I could sit here all day long and sample all the biggest, you know, hit records and then and just sit there and just smash it. But I still try to push the envelope, you know, at the end of the day. You know, the track that I've done with Frankie Wah, or even the original track that we did from the beginning, from the keyboard that Christopher is, I think, to the right of you, the Korg, yeah, the monologue, a lot of the sounds came from that one, the other way, that's it, that one piece of kit. And it's unbelievable, you know, the preset sounds are really amazing. Yeah. But then you could kind of morph them into new sounds, which I did. And I use those in my album quite a lot, of where people go, where'd you get it from? I'm just like, well, it's created.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. And if you're hearing it for the first time, then you're hearing it from me. So it's me that created it. Mm. But it's in the machines. But all the music that you heard from before, back in the day, they're all from the machines.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you listen to a lot of the kind of big, ravey kind of business techno sounds at the moment, all come from Joey Beltram's, you know, when he had that one sound.
Yeah, yeah.
What the Hoover.
You know, the Hoover. It's still going on.
Yeah.
You know, that sound. And you're like, oh my God. You know, the sound. But like Christopher said before, if you now just coming into it and you hear that sound, you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
So, well, 30 years ago, but when we all heard that, I said, whoa. You know, we can't this fact or the dismay of where they are right now, because I think it's where they are right now. It's still experiencing for them. It's just that we're like gatekeepers at the end of the day of this whole scene. We're trying to protect the purity of where I like to think we can still go, but also show people that if I've got all these machines up in front of me, they are all plugged in and they all do something, and they don't do anything unless I do something.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I could stand there, all these machines are standing and just go, right, okay, well, are you ready? Because they're not going to play themselves, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I'll just go, right, here we go, bang. And I literally start off with a kick drum and then basically turn it into whatever the night ends up being. And it could be 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours. You know, me and Christopher did back-to-back, 6 hour show, non-stop, you know, live electronic music.
Still bad, yeah.
It was a phenomenal party. It was amazing. People just still didn't want to go home. You know, we didn't have not one USB in sight. We didn't have no CD players, no nothing. All machines. And people lost their minds.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
Lost my mind.
Yeah, I lost my mind too. but it's exciting. I think, you know, the world is still, you know, waiting for us to basically still do something of which I think we can still be excited about in the future. And I still try to curate electronics live stages within the festivals. Mm. So it's not like DJ, DJ, live act, DJ, DJ. It's like live act, live act, live act, live act, live act. It's all of this. And we've been doing that. And I think more and more, as we've been doing it, more and more we're getting accepted by doing it. So, you know, we're not going anywhere. I'm definitely not going anywhere. We experimented with this in Ibiza, where we had, you know, just live electronic artists in room in the club room, which was brilliant. You know, at the end of the day, the crowd came in, they walked in and went like, where's the DJ? I was like, there isn't any. There's a guy called Colin Benders and he's going to absolutely warp your mind. And that's the end of it. And that's what he did. And he warped their minds, you know. It's fantastic. I have to do it. I could have DJs all day long, just DJing and DJing and DJing. Yeah. But we're not going to turn a corner. We're just going to keep doing that.
There's no evolution to that, is there? And I think this is the thing, is like going, if you kind of going, talking about what you were talking about earlier, like where techno started, right? It started from people just pissing about with synths, right? Realistically. And like, I had DJ Bone on the podcast and I love that guy. And the passion that he has for techno is just unbelievable. And something that he said to me, which has really like resonated to me since he said it, was techno isn't necessarily a genre, it's a culture.
Mm.
And the culture has soul. And the minute you take the soul out of the culture, you don't have techno anymore. And I think that's realistically what you guys are doing, is you're allowing the soul back into the culture by allowing artists to just really be artists and really show what they can do. It doesn't matter what medium you play it, if it's a USB or if it's a sub 37 or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's still going to sound amazing, but it's how do you educate people? And Carl, you're in a very privileged situation to be able to push that forward. And I really respect that both of you are getting behind that, because it's so important. The scene needs it.
It definitely does need it. It's the reason why I profess to do it. You know, I mean, look, I chose not to do Ibiza this year, because if I did Ibiza this year, I'd be DJing there, and DJing there.
Yeah.
And I'd just be along the long lineup of the same lineup that's been there for the last 2 years, and everyone's happy with what's going on at the moment. But I just won't progress to anything more.
Yeah.
And that's a shame for me, because I've always been, as far as I'm concerned, as a progressive artist, to try and turn corners by whatever I choose to put my hand to, whether it's breakbeat, drum and bass, whether it's hard techno, whether it's house music, whether it's funk and soul, you know, whatever I choose to do at a particular time, I always try and progress it and turn it around the corner for me to be able to continue to do what I'm doing. And you know, with ASW, with Christopher, with all the wonderful people that I've met now through this scene, the electronic live artist scene, it's not like a, you know, underground jazz scene, you know what I mean? Where we, you know, we all have these little special handshakes and stuff, and the noodling around, you know, and, you know, these little joints in the middle of Berlin or something. You know, we're I think we kind of gravitate to each other based on what we do. Mm. And as a collective, you know, you're much stronger in numbers, of course. It's still taken a while for people to understand it in such a great way. But I think in time, they're gonna go, right, we just want electronic live artists, because that's where the feel, the soul, the idea, the journey, the experience is from this music point of view, to basically still move things on and forward. I remember when I did my track Electronic Generations, remember that Christopher, the label wanted something a bit more defined by what I do. So 2 days, went in the studio, went ding, 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 came back out, Electronic Generations. I was just like, normally it would have taken me a month to do that track, you know? I just did it without even thought process. And Laurent Garnier, and, you know, I mean, he's unbelievable when it comes to music and his mind and how he feels about things. And he's French, so he can say what he likes. Oh, this is horrible. Catastrophe, it's horrible. Oh, this is the most amazing thing I've ever. Genius. He's like, Laurent's like, blows hot and cold when it comes to this. But, you know, he heard my album and he said, you know what, Kai, goes, Electronic Generations are the best thing you've ever made.
Wow.
Fall off my chair. After like 30 years of knowing the guy, you know, I've done remixes for him and everything. He's never said that. And the track that I just did, and just, it was like, I play it and everything. I was just like, I don't understand. But hey, if you like it, you enjoy it, then good. For me, I was just like, breath of fresh air, you know, because I feel so free when I'm doing this. And I feel that it's me that's now able to contribute to what I believe that's got us here in the first place, and able to now, like I said, privileged position to have to show the now generations that we can do this and turn a corner without having to follow any fashion.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, no following anyone. You know, if we're going to be leading, then they have to follow us.
Yeah.
And that's even if they want to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm really excited about where we are at the moment. I mean, this is only the beginning, but where we are at the moment right now. And with Christopher as well. We're waiting for Christopher's second album, by the way, you lazy git. Come on.
How am I going to get the time of bloody working for you?
You've got a computer, you're on the road, let's do this.
All right, let's just do it. All right, I'll see you in Bulgaria, we'll do it then. But the thing is, like, he is right. And, you know, I've actually been a little bit precious about that. The second album pressure, let's just call it that. First album.
From hierarchy, from the big boss, and like, where is it?
The thing is, you're right, and all the artists that we work with, and of course would love to work with so many more live artists, and actually the door is open. I just really want to push that out there, because we, I mean, of course, with scheduling, and it's hard to find room and time to get everybody's record out, but the door is open because we want to hear from and see and work with live artists, and more female live artists, because there are a lot and they're really, really talented. Yeah. And I want to get that message across. Don't be worried about the fact that there's two old geezers running a label.
Yeah.
We really want to encourage younger live artists and female artists to come on board and work with us. There's a great female artist who works with us, Anon Bast, truly talented improvisational live artist who recreates her tunes entirely live and is incredibly brilliant woman and talented artist. And I guess the point is that, as you said, Carl, every artist that we work with has their own sound. You know, Stimming's album is coming out at the end of this month. He's done it entirely live. He decided not to actually, you know, the way you did your album, to just play and create the tracks by playing. You know, Robert Babich's album that we released last year, he's a true doyen of playing live. He's one of the gods of live. He only does that. He doesn't know what DJing is. That's, you know, he's always played live. He's always produced live. That's his thing. Mark Romboy, another great artist.
Legend.
Who's got a huge legacy and has played with orchestras and produced stuff in such a range and has such a diversity of musical talent. And then we go, you know, Digital Africa, they're like a live Afro house, Afro style act. The diversity is really important. Satek, another live artist, amazing. Mm. And we've played with Kink, we've played, you know, Colin Benders, we've got, you know, High Brazil, who's produced stuff, incredible Irish live artist who's got this breadth of vision for techno, really deep techno. Charlie Thorstenson, a sound that I've never heard. You know, he creates the most unique sound, and it's deep and amazing. Hannes Bieger, incredible producer.
He's amazing.
All of these artists that we work with, I'm so proud that they've come on board to work with us, because The other thing that I should say, that Carl said when we were doing this label, he said, right, it's going to be a live label, only live artists, and we're only releasing albums. And, initially I was like, oh, fuck, okay. right. But I get it, because what you were saying there is like, give the artist the opportunity and the challenge at the same time to create something that is outside of the EP Beatport model of, you know, one or two tracks at a time that are for the dance floor. Give them the opportunity to create a body of work that is more than just for the dance floor.
Yeah.
An album like my own, you know, you could maybe pick two or three tracks that could work on the dance floor, but the rest of it is for listening.
Yeah.
And so we've gone to each of these artists and said, right, and they've come to us and said, we'd love to work with you. And go, right, well, you got to do an album. And some have gone, fuck. We're working with Disloa Vos, a Dutch artist who's amazing. His album is coming out next year. And initially he was like, whoa, that's
a lot.
Oh, I don't know if I can make an album.
Yeah.
But then he went away and he came back with something incredible. So, you know, the opportunity and the challenge is there in the fact that we're asking people to do more than they would normally do in this dance scene.
Yeah.
It's to express themselves through the creation of their music live and in the studio, that go in a way that goes beyond what everybody's doing at the moment, is just releasing track by track.
Yeah.
And I think that also it means that the artist is challenged to do something outside of the box.
I think I totally agree. And I'd like to get your opinion on longevity as well. For both of you have had very long careers in this industry. But I think for me, as somebody that's not been in the industry as long, and the people that I look up to in the industry are all album artist. They've all made albums at some point in their career and still making albums. And whether that's every year, whether that's every 2 years, or whether that's every 5 or 10 years, they've all had this part in their career where an album has dropped. And that is that kind of moment in time for that artist, that is who they are. Classic example, Chemical Brothers. Like, for me, the Chems are quintessentially the best album artist in electronics. My opinion, whatever, you guys can disagree. But like, you know exactly what you're going to get with a Chemical Brothers album. And I think for me, that creates a longevity for an artist. And it's not about your hit record. It's not about kind of how many views you get on TikTok or anything like that. It's like, this really holds tight to being an artist and placing your mark on the industry for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about my album, it being my fifth album as well, if you go back to the first album at the end of the cliche, there, at the end of the day, there's so much scope in that realm of music. I remember we had Kink over to our studio for 1 year, and he said that his whole music was inspired by my first album.
Wow.
It could have knocked me over with a feather. I mean, so I was like, and I'm like, Kink is like unbelievable.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's sitting there with my album, he's going this track and this track and this track. I'm just thinking, oh my God, I actually did reach out to a lot of people with that first album. But I've always felt that I've had more to give than just a single basis of me being a DJ and just offering that. And, you know, I think that one of the reasons why there's so much longevity, because you can always go back to that album and go, well, actually, I didn't remember that record. I'd forgotten that Carl had done, but
yeah,
still holds water today in where it is. But even though it was created, you know, nearly 28 years ago, 25 years ago. Mm. So I'm just like, oh my God, you know, it's, I think you to have so to be in the industry for so long, you have to have history of making music that represents who you actually are.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I mean, I come from the school of you know, glam rock and listen to rock and roll and in the 80s, you know, the new romantics and punk and all it's all around me, and I get it all, you know, Sham 69 and the Clash, Rock the Casbah and everything, you know, all these little things are all in my head, and they all come out in my music in some ways. You know, little riffs from places of which I, you know, Metal Guru is a Judah. Yeah. I wouldn't say that now. But, you know, in there, you know, the lines of that is something of which all comes out in some ways as an experience of what I've been exposed to.
Yeah.
So it's, I think, and now that I've been pushing into my music even from now to the future, it's there. It's,
yeah.
If you listen to Electronic Generations, you know, there's certain elements and parts of the music you're hearing in there comes from that, but then I kind of deliver it in an absolutely another way. But also a lot of people, when they heard the album, thought it's an ode to the old school,
yeah,
because of the lot of acid in there and that kind of thing. But the way it's been produced and using, you know, the drum machine as upfront percussion and that kind of thing. But I kind of like the idea of that, because everyone's still going back to go forward with the initial sound.
Yeah.
So we're still not really going anywhere. We're going forward slowly, but trying to let go of the past. But the past was so great and still is great that we can't let go of it. So it's interpreted in this way. It's forward. So
yeah.
I think because I've been in the past, you know what I mean, in the middle, and I'm still here now, you know, four generations later. I think for me, I don't think it's ever going to stop. You know, there's been points where I'm just thinking, I've had enough, I'm done, no more music, I'm over it. I don't want to do any more touring. And I do a party or do or release a record or hear something. I mean, even Christopher the other day was like, did you do a record with Kevin Saunderson called Say Something? I'm like, yeah. And I said, but I did that like 25 years ago. I've only just released it on Spotify. I'm like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, went on there, Say Something, and it's like a down tempo soul record.
Wow.
I completely forgot about it. I was like, yeah, and I found it, and I was like, oh yeah, you know, that's like really funky, but it's got the elements of me in it with the soul of Kevin and the song itself. It's just wonderful to be able to, you know, come back on something that I've already done and to move that forward. And if Christopher, basically, I mean, you, obviously with the Metals and other, you know, artists that you work with over the time, again, you know, your journey continues to be so based on your
Well, I mean, yeah, I've played live since forever. I used to run a night in Melbourne where a club night, a techno, underground techno night, for, you know, it was in literally in a basement, it fit 100 people. It had a huge sound system, and we just banged it. And every week, it was every week, and we always had live acts. It was, you know, always. That was a priority for us. So I've been doing it for a long time, and, you know, I've been inspired by Autechre, Aphex Twin. You know, you go right back, and they still are quite innovative, if you think about it, because they're just making crazy shit with gear or weird software or, you know, like Altecra. I went to see them recently, actually. See is not the right word, because actually they turn all the lights off and in the room, and you just have to listen to the sound system, and they just make it live. So, I think we are drawing from the past in so many ways, because, of course, that's our inspiration. We've been through this scene for a long time. We've had a lot of experiences from, you know, like one of my first DJing gigs was at Trezor in 1994. The car was already a superstar by then, so he's had a million more experiences before that, you know. So, you know, we're old guys, but we're still, I would like to think, on the edge of what this is. I would like to think that, but I still am so inspired by so much stuff from the past and inspired by the new technology. So I think now we're at a point where we've got all this history of experimentation in electronic music. It's now, what, 40 years, let's say, or beyond, more, like Kraftwerk were earlier, that, you know, we could go right back to, you know, those early days. We could even go right back to, you know, Pierre Boulez and Musique Concrète and all that amazing stuff. And now we're at a point where I really want to be surprised and amazed by stuff.
Yeah.
And there are times when I am. And I most often it's when it's a live artist that's done something. And I think that's because of the nature of what they're trying to do. And I want also personally as an artist to push the boundaries for myself, you know, to try and create something that maybe scares me a bit or challenges me, artistically speaking. And I think that as an artist, I think that's the most important thing to do, to try and express your vision of the world through your art in a way that sometimes may even shock you. I mean, I remember, Carl, when we were recording your live sets and we were doing it together in the studio, there was no idea that you were making an album. We were just jamming away and doing stuff and like, oh, let's try this modular thing and try and plug that in and see what that does. And there was lots of fun. And, you know, you were staying up all night. We were like a couple of 20-year-olds. You know, Carl was texting me at 4 a.m. Guess what I just did? And we were like, fuck, yeah, that's awesome.
And I
we recorded loads and loads of stuff. I think that's
super important though, isn't it? And I think from an outsider's point of view, and especially having this conversation with you guys, it feels like you're excited about it. And it's like, for two guys that have been in the industry for as long as you guys, like even myself, I've been touring full time for 10 years. I've been DJing for over 15 years, but even I can sometimes get jaded. And sometimes be like, what's new? Like, why, what we, what's this for? What are we doing? What am I doing this for? And like, I think we have to set goals for ourselves to innovate and to grow as artists. And for me, like, I'm working on a project at the moment, and it's been the most fun time that I've written in the studio ever that I can remember, even from the first time I got into the studio. And it sounds like you guys are in that process of like, we're just having fun.
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's you know, when the, you know, my live equipment is all set up, and the, you know, they have the anticipation of what's going to happen next, because when you're DJing, you know what's going to happen, because you have all the music that you have it in your mind of what you're going to start with, where you're going to end up with, and that kind of. With this, I have no clue, because it's all in the machines, and I've got to get it out of the machines. And that's the thing about it. And you can feel that the crowd's in anticipation, because they come to hear hybrid set, what's this? So what's Cole going to do now? Is it going to fall on its arse? Is it going to be the most amazing thing I've ever heard? What's happening? What's going on?
Is it a hologram?
I
mean,
yeah, you know, when I went to all the early rave parties, I had no clue what DJ was playing. I had no clue what music was being played. All I knew is that there was a whole bunch of people, some lasers, some good sound system, and we're going to have a great time. And you know, I was blown away by, you know, some of the music that I heard at that time, which was, you know, then I got inspired by, which I made myself and that sort of stuff. Incredible. So I really was, you know, when it came to raid for raid's sake, I was swamming it all. Yeah. But in the same time, techno music was always the thing.
Yeah.
You know, if it was rave music, I'll play rave breakbeat with techno music, and I would chop that tree down all the time, and I would try to go more to techno to rave. Yeah. And eventually I made the choice to go techno over rave, because for me, rave music at a particular time, it had played itself out, and then all you're left with for me was techno music. And when the techno music of that particular time got harder, faster, harder, faster, harder, faster, it got to a point where I don't want to play that fast anymore. So I brought my BPMs down to get back to the purity of the sound, and then drive that home.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. And then, you know, to support that was the release of Intact Records in 1999. I had another record label before that called MMR Records, which I put out a whole bunch of early Smith and Selway music, and John Selway, actually, and Lenny D, and all sorts of things. I put out a lot of music, you know, in the techno realm of that kick drum. You know, I always enjoyed, you know, having the breakbeat when the kick drum comes in. I always had that kind of stomp between my music. But house music was always something of which I'm not truly house music, but I really, really appreciate vocals, gospel vocals, you know, arrangements in house music. You know, the bass lines of house has strictly even been one of my favorite house records of all time. You know, did everything, you know, in a sense of the sound and what it gives you, whether it's tribal, whether it's gospel, whether it was down tempo, whether it was just strings or arrangement. I love all of that ideal of music. And you know, it still carries on today of how I feel about it. If you hear any of my sets at Space, it always started off with soulful house into techno.
Yeah.
Every single time. You know, and I've played house music on the terrace, then go inside and go house music into techno music. So I always had that balance between everything. You know, when Raven was Raven, it was on.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, Fabio, Groove Rider, Ratty, Kenny Ken. These boys are just slamming it, you know, and I'm in the middle of it all, but I still went kick drums, you know, put the stomp on it, you know. So that's what set me above everyone else, because I knew that I would come out of that realm of jungle into that techno sound. If you hear any of my tracks from back in the day, so I'm excited about where we are now as I was back then.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people who kind of maybe missed that, because obviously I was playing in Ibiza for quite a lot more than anywhere else. I wasn't able to drive that home in some ways, and now that I am, I'm getting really excited even more about, you know, turning that now another chapter in the page of what I do to support what I think is lacking at the moment out there, and that's live electronic artists being seen as, you know, a creative force in this music, and you know, hoping to see more of it happen in the future. I remember one day going back, and I'll tell you one more story of Adamski. Now, Adamski for me is like, you know, one of the originators of live electronic artists. Well, he didn't really have a lot. He had like a 909, he had an SQ80, and maybe another keyboard. But he made that work so well. It wasn't funny of the reason why his songs came out. Now, I live in Brighton, and Adamski lives in London. And I remember calling him up once, and I was doing this, like, shebeen. I did this party in the top of this house, in the top floor, flat of this house. And I asked him to come down with his keyboard to come play some music. And he did. He got in his car, drove down, got his keyboards out, and just started playing in his house for about 50 people. I'm like, if we only had a camera, people wouldn't believe it. And there it is. That, for me, was the beginning of everything when it comes to electronic live artists.
I think also for me, the crux of the moral of the story is just bring back musicianship to it, and it just allow people to express themselves rather than putting themselves into a box to have a commerciality.
I mean, I think, look, there's nothing wrong with commerciality.
We all need it, right? We all need that.
And, you know, like, I love great pop music, you know.
Same.
You know, that song Toxic is one of the greatest pop songs ever written. You know, Aaliyah, an amazing artist. I mean, they are old as well. But I love amazing artists who have a great musicality and are able to deliver something that goes... it maybe transcends the genre into a crossover of commerciality.
Yeah.
Great, I love it. And another artist who we really love and respect and have worked with, is a live artist, is Rainier Zonnefeld. Amazing.
Yeah.
Incredibly talented, actually classically trained pianist, who's gone, as you say, Carl, gone clear. Gone to this, gone to this stratosphere of fast cars. But he worked really hard, has created incredibly good music, and is actually an incredibly talented live artist. Yeah. And, you know, he is a friend. And, you know, some people may go, well, he plays too fast and he's just all this stuff. But again, he's chosen to go there and has had the ability to do it. And yeah, I take my hat off to that, because that is what I want to see. Like if we're talking about somebody like Stimming, who chooses to really stay true to his identity and not buy into commerciality, he's pushing boundaries. Again, I equally respect that. So I just think it's about artists being true to themselves, being true to what they want to deliver, and doing it in a way that's innovative and showing us how they're doing that. I'm truly inspired by that. I'm equally inspired by Rainier as I am by Stimming. Obviously, Carl is the great ambassador from the very beginning of this scene. I mean, you know, Carl, you've been there since the start of Acid House. You've been there since, you know, the Flintstones. You know,
not that
old. you're still young, mate. You know, you're still as young now as you did then, buddy. But, you know, like, and you're truly inspiring to us all, to the very fact that you've gone, right, I'm going to pick up the drum machine again and go out live.
Yeah,
and that to me is the very essence of it, and I think that's where we need to take our inspiration from. It's certainly given me a resurgence in my career because of that too. Mm. I know we help each other, but I think truly great artists will never stop trying to find ways to express something that is inside and also reach the community. And I do think techno is about a community. I do think it's a mindset. Agreed. And I do think that playing live is real techno, if you want to use the word real, you know.
Yeah.
That's not to say that the great DJs who play live. I do think that Laurent Garnier is one of the true great connoisseurs. And you remember that time he sent me an email going, I love your album. It's amazing. I texted Carl, going, well, life goals achieved.
Done. Ticked off.
But, you know, there's such a huge history now.
Yeah.
There's so much to draw from. And there's actually still so much more to do.
Yeah. I agree. And I think on that note, we should wrap this up, because I know we could talk about this all day long, but I think it's just been an amazing conversation to have both of you on here and both of you championing something that you truly believe in and also sticking by your guns. It's so important to see it, especially for younger artists like myself that is still working it out and kind of doing our things, and having you guys kind of push new things is really important to me as well. So I really appreciate that. And also
Will, in another 15 years time, we're going to be doing the podcast for you. your long career in techno and house music.
I'd love that. I'd love that, man. Definitely. I'll hold you to that.
Okay.
But we love your music. It's really exciting.
Thank you.
It is.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Guys, thank you so much for coming on. How can people get involved in the label and kind of send you music to kind of be part of the crew?
Well, I mean, it's a hard one, because, you know, I don't want to be totally inundated and not be able to get back to people or make promises that we can't deliver.
Of
but
course.
But really, you know, Instagram, I'm all over it. Just know that we only sign artists who are playing live.
Love it.
That is the criteria. You're playing live. You don't have to be fully experienced, but you're playing live.
Love it.
And doing interesting stuff. And, you know, it may be Insta's good. I don't really look at Facebook. Carl's very busy with his stuff. So I think that's a good way to do it. Get through, come at us through Insta, email Christopher@awesomesoundwave.com. No, I'm very slow with emails. So, you know, wait.
That's amazing. I'm sure people will find out. If they want to get involved with it, they will find out and get in touch with you guys.
So. Yeah, but, and also, though, I mean, you know, a lot of the artists we discover as well. So, you know, we're always looking around on YouTube, you know, for anything that excites us. And then we and if we find something, then we normally get in contact. So,
yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be direct to us. Just if you're doing what you're doing, we might find you.
Awesome. I mean, that's how we found Anon Bast. Yeah. Saw her putting stuff up on YouTube, and I was like, "Oh, she's good." I sent it to Carl. He's like, "Yeah, she's good. Let's get in touch." You know. So you know, we really do like to curate in lots of ways, and more artists are putting their stuff out there, knowing that there are people looking. And I'm always on Instagram. I'm a bit addicted to it. Always going, "What's this? Oh, this is interesting." You know, kind of looking into it. So there's always. In fact, majority of people we've got in touch with that way.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. That's great. Lads, thank you very much. Keep safe. Safe travels. Keep doing what you're doing. Thank you for everything that you're doing. And I'm sure I'll see you in a venue very soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Will.
Cheers, guys. Take it easy. Thank you.
Thanks, Will.
And that is a wrap. Big love to Christopher and Carl for coming on. If you enjoyed it, please send it to your friends. Please share it. Please hit subscribe. Please give us a review. Get involved on the Discord channel, and I will catch you very soon. Keep safe. Till next time.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.